Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We're trying to reach my guest, Vicki Oliver, and I don't know where she is, but we're just going to keep trying and hoping that we're able to get through to her today for the interview on the Millionaire's Handbook. Okay, let me start off with a thought, since we're waiting to find out about Vicki. This is by Meredith Vieira. She is a broadcast journalist, and she said, the key to a successful life is always believing the cup is half full. You want to make sure that your life, your cup, if you will, is filled with your favorite wine. And she said, seriously, I've always thought the cup should never be completely full. Why? Because then there's no room for growth. The key to, well, let's see, what do we want to say? Happiness? Fulfillment? What word do you want to use? There are so many different keys that can bring richness to life, but it really takes our being interested enough in making things work and in being a participant in life. That is what makes life successful. I can't tell you how many people through the years that I've known that have had fame and fortune, and they've had all kinds of things that so many of us would just sit and go gaga over. Yet when you really find out their stories, many times there's a lot of misery behind the facade. Maybe someone's got an alcoholic problem, or they've suffered more than one trauma. When someone says, life is what you make it, it's really a very true statement. I don't know of any shortcuts myself. I've gone through the ups and downs in life, and I'm sure I'm going to go through plenty more before I leave this experience of life. But that's living. Nobody gives you a guarantee on anything. And the reality is, nobody really owes you anything. It's actually another thought that you need to remember. You owe life. You've been given the opportunity, through various talents you may have, to bring something into this world that could be exceptional, that can really make a difference about and to people's lives. Why? I don't know. But I do know that if you don't give the best of what you have, and if you're not putting your best out there, well, then you're shortchanging yourself. You're not shortchanging anybody else, but you're shortchanging yourself. And that's something so often that is not really looked at. So many times we're so self-critical, we really beat ourselves up thinking, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that, I should have done the other. When really what we needed to do was be attentive to what we've already got. The grass isn't always necessarily greener on the other side. The reality is you live with yourself, you're in your own chassis, no one else can know exactly how you feel. It's not possible. But you can have integrity with yourself. And if you have integrity with yourself, then you're going to have integrity with others. If you have integrity with others, you're going to provide example about how someone should represent themselves. Life is a phenomenal movie script, and there are so many different parts to it. One of the items that I wanted to talk about today was the crystal skull. Have you ever heard of them? Well, I have heard of them through the years, and of course I've read a number of articles, I've done interviews on the show, but I think until I met Joshua Shapiro, I didn't really have a chance to see what was so significant about these crystal skulls. And Joshua happened to come to my home, and he has seen a lot of the skulls that have been written about that are in the London Museum and other museums throughout the world, and the stories are just amazing. And there's a legend about those crystal skulls. And the legend, as best we know it, relates to a very, very old Mayan civilization. Now, 13 skulls. Remember the Indiana Jones movie? Ah, yes, those 13 skulls. Well, that was being based, tongue-in-cheek, on this old legend. And the legend is that when all 13 skulls are brought together, an apocalyptic situation will be avoided. Now, there are so many people that have different opinions about these skulls. There are some that say they're relics of the lost world of Atlantis. And there are some people that have had absolutely phenomenal experiences with certain skulls, and they say they're like computers. They're all quartz, and these skulls just are these super-duper computer processing systems that we just really don't understand. They can look into the past, the present, and the future. And one of the skulls that had been analyzed showed that it had been carved from one single piece of rock crystal. And the detail in the skull is just absolutely amazing. In fact, one of the skulls that was discovered that is, in my mind, one of the most phenomenal, actually has a moving jaw. And the preciseness and exactness of the carving of the crystal is just mind-boggling. Well, I was not aware that there could be crystals that were of that size, but there was a cave, a crystal cave, that was discovered recently in Mexico, where crystals as big as a house were found. So these crystal skulls that we have discovered, and we're going to perhaps gain more information about, more than likely came from something like that crystal cave that had these phenomenal, phenomenal crystals of size that just beyond our imagining. The National Geographic has a wonderful, wonderful section on it, and that cave has been closed. In fact, what's interesting in that cave is that it's so warm, people cannot stay in it for very, very long. Now, they honestly don't know how these ancient skulls, and you really have a hard time dating them. You, to the best of my knowledge, you truly cannot date a rock. You just don't know. But there's other factors that you can consider. Now, ancient people, they had to be really skilled to do this kind of intricate work. And there are some people that have guesstimated, and I say guesstimated with a good reason, that it would have taken about a good 300 hours or more to do the skull. Well, I can recall reading a story by a Tibetan Lama that was written many, many years ago. And when he was a little boy, he was born in Tibet, and he was told that his future was that he had to be a Lama, which he did eventually become. So at the Potala, there was a crystal ball that he was given because he had very strong clairvoyant talents. And they said, this is one of the tools you're going to learn how to use. And it took hundreds of years to create this crystal ball because the monks used sand to polish this absolutely perfectly formed crystal into a ball. And it was all done by hand. So it was a very labor-intensive job. So 300 man-hours to produce this fine skull that's so intricately carved. I still question that. Now, they don't have any idea the age of these skulls, because you really don't know. But the fact is that their history is quite interesting. Now, I have a picture of one in front of me that's 4 1/3 inches high, and this one is in a Paris museum. It was presented to the museum by Alphonse Binard in 1878. Now, one of the interesting things about this skull is that there's a prism at the back of the skull so that any ray of light that goes into the eye sockets is reflected there, and anyone looking into the eye sockets will see the whole room around them reflected. Now, there is a legend with this one skull that is now in this Paris Museum. It's supposed to depict an ancient goddess of the dead. And they really don't know, but they're guesstimating that this skull is over 35,000 years old. But they don't have a clue, really. They're just speculating. They're guessing. But you know, these skulls have turned up all over the world. And now, because they have become, well, shall we say, more famous, there are people that are manufacturing skulls. And some of them are made out of precious stones, like lapis lazuli. There's rose quartz. There's just all kinds of fine stones that are being carved into these skull formations. The interesting thing is it doesn't have the fine, fine detail that the real ancient skulls, one's in the London Museum, the other one's in Paris, and I think there's another one in the Mexican Museum, and there's a few others. But these 13, if the legend is true, when they all have a chance to meet each other, well, I'd say it's going to make quite an impact on something or other. But just a little bit of trivia there on the crystal skull. This is Donna Sebo. We have not been able to reach Vicki. I don't know what's happened. She's in New York. Maybe she got stuck in a traffic jam. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to open the phone lines, and if you would like to have me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, give me a call at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I wanted to tell you about a woman by the name of Kathy Smith. This is a woman that, well, she went against popular modalities. And I think it takes a lot of courage to be able to say no to people that are considered experts, to have trust in yourself. I really think that that takes a very special level of courage. Why? Because socially we are indoctrinated that if we go to, quote-unquote, an expert, we're supposed to take whatever they say as law. Or as an absolute, and not trust our feelings. Do we have Vicki on the line?
Yes.
Vicki! Yay!
Hi!
We got ya! Wow! I'm so glad you were able to make it. Okay, folks, I'll tell you the rest of Kathy's story later. Vicki, how are you?
I'm good.
Well, now, you have this book, The Millionaire's Handbook.
Yes.
And when I look at this, I really like how the gold embossing is done on it. But it says how to look and act like a millionaire, even if you're not. You're in New York City. Everybody wants to look like a millionaire. There are so many fakes walking the street there. You know that they're not millionaires.
I know. And it's so expensive here, too. It's even worse.
Yes, it is.
It's so expensive.
Yes, it is. Vicki, you've been a career advisor and an image consultant in Manhattan for, oh my goodness, for so many years. How did this become a passion for you?
I honestly felt that we've been in a period of time, like we were hit really badly with the recession, and it lasted for about 4 years, and we're just crawling out of it now. And I felt like, you know, it was making people extremely unhappy, you know, just having no money, like losing jobs left and right. And I just thought if we could prioritize how we spend our money, maybe I could figure out a way to do something that would make people a little bit happier, like stretch a dollar a little bit further.
Vicki, there is something that has been an observation I've made and an observation a lot of people have made. When you go back into the fashion history, you go back to the early 1900s, you had a particular style, you move up into the 1950s, and it seemed like between, well, sort of after the Second World War, you had the Roaring Twenties, then you had all the flapper, dapper outfits, which in my personal opinion looked hideous, but that's my opinion.
Me too, I don't like them either.
I hate those hats. Oh, Lord, do I hate those hats.
Yeah, and they're hard to wear.
Awful.
For most people.
Yes, they just, to me, they look hideous. And when you watch the old movies, it seemed like there was a style that started to evolve. Sort of during the Second World War, they had those god-awful shoes that you really think that they should have, you know, They've just been all disintegrated. They should never have even been kept in a museum. They were so ugly. But anyway,
totally ugly.
Yes, you evolve into the 50s, and there seemed to be this wonderful style. I mean, Coco Chanel, you had so many people that developed styles for women that were just wonderful. Men seem to have a better style aspect. Of course, guys' clothes don't really change all that much. Maybe they
don't change.
Colors. No, but the woman...
They're lucky.
Yes, the women's style. I mean, it's as if I think most designers are temporarily driven by insanity because they've got to come up with something that's so far out or weird. And I was talking with some women, and they said, you know, we really like to look at the old movies. It had Greer Garson and Audrey Hepburn and Doris Day, and these women just looked beautiful. Of course, their hair was never out of order, their lipstick never smeared, their mascara never ran.
Right.
I mean, they could go through, Esther Williams could swim, and, you know, nothing was ever moved.
Right.
And it's just, but there was style. I mean, there was...
Right.
They looked like women. They really enjoyed the clothes, and they were gorgeous. I mean, beautiful, beautiful clothes. And I look at this, and then here we are today. You have multiple levels of T-shirts. The standard dress is stringy hair. I just really am stunned. And yet women long. So it's beautiful.
Right.
What happened?
Well, you know, the fashion industry is, for women, it's always trying to duplicate itself, you know? And there's always kind of a retro looking back at the old days. And sometimes just people get tired of it because there aren't any new ideas, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But from my standpoint, I actually think that's an advantage because I think it's possible for women to refine, like pick a style and refine it. And not worry too much about what the trend is this year, you know? Not worry
much.
Are we looking back at the 1950s or the 20s? You know, what are we doing this year? That doesn't really matter. One needs to pick a style that works for you and then just have a few pieces that exemplify it.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. But I can remember, even as a little girl, that was promoted by just about anybody. How have we become so disassociated? I talk with professional business people. They have individuals come in for interviews that look like they've just been run over by a bulldozer, and these people say, gee, you really should hire me. I'm really brilliant, or I'm this or that. And you look at them and you go, you have got to be kidding. I wouldn't want you in front of the public for 5 minutes. You'd scare them to death.
That's right. And also, you know, the problem with that is also that you just don't trust a person like that with your clients. You know, if they're just so unprofessional that they're walking in, you know, rolling in with like makeup askew, looking all strung out, why would I take that person and then put them in front of a client?
Mm-hmm. You just don't.
I mean, when you come in for an interview, you have to prove to that person that you're going to be an ambassador for that company. That's the way to think of it.
I can remember days, and I was working full-time, that I would go out and go shopping. And you have some recommendations in here that I used myself. And I just said, you don't need to look like you just came out of a dog wash. You can really look attractive. You don't have to spend a whole bunch of money. And your book is about how you can really present yourself so that you do have a sense of style, so that you look together.
Right.
And that people, because you have 30 seconds if you're lucky to make an impression.
Absolutely.
And I can tell you from public work, and I know, Vicki, you've got the same thing. If you look like a slob, bingo. You are automatically judged.
They know, like, the minute that you go in and you shake somebody's hand and then you walk down the hallway, mostly that person already has an impression of you. So later, whatever you say in the interview, let's say it's an interview, all you're doing is already enhancing what that person already feels about you. So if your first impression, a snapshot, is negative, then you're just adding to the negativity. You know, and if it's positive, usually you're just adding to the positive impression. They've already made up their mind. It's frightening how fast people make up their minds.
It really is. And you can see it in their eyes.
It's bad. And they're trying to figure out if you fit. Whether or not you fit, it's that simple.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now let's talk about dressing, because guys have it a little bit easier. But when I see guys walking in for an interview, and they've got on a T-shirt, they've got a hairstyle that looks like it's been whipped with an egg beater, and it's 2 feet long. It's not quite an afro, but it's getting close, but it's just totally disassembled. And they mumble, and they're wearing pants that are stained, and they walk in, and you look at them, and you go, all right, let's see, how much time am I going to give them? Let's talk about the guys first, then we'll get to the gals.
Right. Yeah, it's very negative, and it's so easy to figure out what the corporate code is, because all you need to do these days is go online, look up the company, find some photographs of employees who work there, and see what they're wearing.
That's interesting, because when you're saying that, I know of people that have gone in for interviews where they did something like that, and the photos were the employees wearing T-shirts. They go in and wear the T-shirt, and they were not happy with the way they were dressed.
Well, it's a different book that I wrote, which is about job interviewing, but what I usually recommend is that you go online and you look up that company, and then you try to look 25% more polished than you would have to if you were already working there. So that way you're showing respect for the dress code, but you're not overdressing the part. You know, if everybody wears khakis, you don't want to walk in a four-piece suit. But you don't want to walk in a three-piece suit. You know, you have to choose your outfit very carefully to prove that you understand how you need to look every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's
You don't want to be overdressed, but you don't want to look like a slob.
So this is something people really need to pay attention to I really think, number one, people need to know that their hair needs to be well-groomed.
Yes.
And, you know, guys don't need to worry about makeup, thank heaven. but they do need to bathe. They need to know a body odor is not something that's going to be exciting. In fact, that can really clinch an interview really fast.
Yes, it can. Yes, it can. I'm not a big fan of the comb forward either. I don't like guys combing their hair forward and hiding their face.
Oh, sort of like a Donald Trump style?
Yeah, I don't really like that style.
I couldn't avoid that one. I just had to bring that one up. This
no
guy has so much money, he can do it anyway.
Donald,
he can wear a toupee. It doesn't make any difference.
Terrific,
so the guy can go, but you can dress economically. And I know a lot of people. It's something where you go, oh, I don't have $500 to spend on a suit. Where would you recommend that guys go to buy clothes? They're not going to be wearing $1,000, $500,000 suits. That's just ridiculous. They're not necessarily going for that kind of positioning.
Right.
Where do they go?
I would recommend, to be honest, I would recommend that somebody, and I say this in my book, I really feel like you need one great suit. You know, that's what I think. I would go to a department store and I would buy one great suit. I would try to have it go on sale. I talk about befriending a salesperson and trying to find out when the sales are going to be. But that's what I would try to do, because you really need it. You can't cheat that one thing. It's like a building block. You don't need seven mediocre pieces, but you do need one good suit when you're interviewing. You know, and I talk a lot about going in and like to a department store and learning like what a suit should look like the drape of it and the feel of it, you know, and hopefully you can afford one really good suit. And then I would wear that everywhere.
One of the things for men really distinctly have an advantage over the women, is that in a lot of men's stores, let's say department stores that have men's departments, they actually have people that will talk to you and tell you how something should hang, how you should look. They have the tailors.
They have tailors.
Yeah, they
have
tailors.
You know, at Saks Fifth Avenue, the men's tailoring is free. So it's a perfect opportunity to have something look really spectacular.
Right. So, guys, you can go to places like Nordstrom's. They have a fabulous men's department. And you can talk to people, say, how should this fit me? What's going to make me look best? Talk to the guys that do the tailoring so that you can look savvy. It really is important.
Right.
Now,
and, you know, if your shoulders slope down, you know, they can correct that. I mean, there are all kinds of things that can be achieved with beautiful tailoring.
Absolutely. Now with the gals. Now, I know we're going to be going on break pretty soon, but we gals really are at a disadvantage. You can find something beautiful, unless you know someone that's really good as a seamstress that can alter clothes for you, which is a wonderful thing. I have done that. I've got a fabulous
gal. Befriend those people.
Oh, you need to know those people because they can take something that maybe looks like it just came off of a hippopotamus, and it will. They can size it for you, and you will look absolutely stunning. The very thing we've talked about with the guys is important for the gals.
Yes.
Very, very important for the gals. And having things fit. And I think that it used to be something where there were standards, where, gee whiz, if you're 5'2", don't try to wear belts that are 6 inches wide around your waist because you're going to disappear. It's just not going to work. If you're short-waisted, forget it. You're going to look like something that's waddling across whatever. I wouldn't care how beautiful the outfit was. So we have to look at the variables in our size and in our style. Now, with women, the guys, they can get by with a nice pair of slacks, maybe a sports jacket, a dress shirt, a nice tie. They're all done. We gals have to really look at things a little differently. So when we come back, let's go into talking about that.
Okay.
And let's help the gals that are listening in the audience that are maybe job hunting. How can we really understand what looks good for us? Because, hey, if you look like a million, if you really are attractively dressed for yourself, believe me, people pay attention. Donna Sebo here with Vicki Oliver. We were able to connect with her. We're going to be talking about her Millionaire's Handbook here, how to look and act like a millionaire, even if you're not. We're going to be back in just a minute.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprosin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprosin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprosin. Toprosin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprosin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprosin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. My guest, Vicki Oliver, we were able to connect with her. We're going to be talking about some of the components in her book, The Millionaire's Handbook, How to Look and Act Like a Millionaire, Even If You're Not One. Vicki, I just found so many different parts of your book fascinating, but let's talk about the gals. We've been talking about the guys and what they can do and making suggestions for them. We gals sometimes go into stores and we look at clothes and we go, you have got to be kidding. Where did these designers come up with this stuff?
And I know. They can be very, very impractical. It is. It can be very impractical. But I actually, you know, one tip that's in the book that I think is a really good thing for women to keep in mind is to listen to your friends. If you go to an event and three of your friends come racing up to you and say, wow, you look fantastic. What have you done, you know, to look so good? I would just look at the color that you happen to be wearing, and then I would take that color with me the next time you go shopping and try to match the same color, because I believe in power colors. And there's certain colors that make us look ravishing, and there are other colors that just drain the color right out of our faces.
Oh, that's
so true. And I think
that
when you go on an interview, you want to look your best.
I agree. And I think also those colors can really make a statement. I've got a girlfriend who's blonde. She can wear pastels. I'm a winter color person, and that was really a hot thing to be aware of about 15 years ago or so.
Right.
And it still stands in good stead because we all have different color tones. I've got a friend who's blonde, who is pale complected, and she looks absolutely yummy in pastel.
Exactly.
And dreamy white. She looks awesome. I've got another friend who's African American. She has this deliciously coppery, dark complexion. She can wear a color like a metallic copper, and she looks like a goddess. It's absolutely
right.
Awesome. Me?
That's right.
I have,
and
you know,
when
if
you
I were to wear
people,
it, I'd look like something that should be dumped off the pier. I mean, it's just
when
not
you meet
work.
People for the first time, you really want to be wearing the best color for you.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody
absolutely.
Can, like, let's take the color green. Everybody can wear a shade of green, but you
mm-hmm.
have to know which one looks good on you.
Very, very true. And being a winter color myself, the vivid colors, like reds, every time
yes.
I wear red, positive response. If I try to wear pastel colors, it's just blah.
And so if you were meeting somebody and it really mattered, you wouldn't want to wear pastels that day.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. In New York, I love New York. I love New York City because you can find anything and everything within one block radius. All you have
yes.
to do is put yourself on a corner.
It is sort of fabulous that way.
I love it. I just think there is so much personality to New York.
Right.
So much cultural diversity. It is awesome. And there is still in New York the standard for dress. And there's always been this, have a basic black dress in your wardrobe, have a nice set of pearls, like a pearl necklace, pearl earrings, but you work with the basic. I remember that being drummed into me so many years
right.
ago. Have a basic
right.
black dress that you can add to, because I don't care what generation you talk about, from the 40s on, women often have not had very much money to spend on a wardrobe. And the very point that you brought out at the beginning is have something basic that you can add to, that you can dress up or dress down. And if you're on a tight budget, that's what you should do. Is that still
right,
the case?
Especially because black can save you a lot of money, like at the dry cleaners, for example. It doesn't show dirt very well. You know, there are lots of reasons. It's flattering. It takes off a few pounds.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating stuff. Now, I had to chuckle because you've got the chapter in here, The Body of a Millionaire, and I laughed when I came to the part where you said most male millionaires, this is especially with men, not so much for the women, but for the men, they're a bit heavy set, and you said it's a result of consuming too much foie gras and champagne. In other words, they ate too much. And the image so often that's promoted via movies, et cetera, is that all these people that look like millionaires are svelte and, you know, whatever. And
right,
the reality is they
true.
Look just like the rest of us. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
They,
I also give tips
well.
In the book for, you know, for women, I say, you know, unfortunately, there's a bit of a double standard. And for women, they are expected to look very thin all the time. But I also give tips on how to cheat that so that you just dress thinner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You bring something that I've mentioned on my show, and that is that the people in New York, you don't see as many really obese people moving. And that's
right.
Because most of the people that are in New York, in Manhattan especially, they're walking an average of 5 miles a day. So
exactly.
Even if they had pizza for lunch, it's burned off by the time they get home because they're walking to and from the subway, they're moving.
That's true. It's a walking city. You know,
yes.
In the book, I have a little bit of fun, but I talk about different places and whether or not they're sedentary places. Like if it's a very car-centric culture, sometimes that can lead to a sedentary lifestyle. In Manhattan, we don't have cars, so we're just walking around all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you go into another section of, you had so many chapters in your book, but this one really is significant to me because I am really saddened at how, with so many young people coming out of school, they don't understand that how they speak makes a difference.
Right.
It's
so unfortunate. It is unfortunate because after that initial impression that you make when somebody's taking just a snapshot of the way you look, essentially, after that, once you open your mouth, hopefully you want to sound smart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For example, you don't really want to sound like a Valley girl. You don't want to always say the word like and and huh and all these filler words when you could be using real words.
You know is really the like and the you know.
Right.
I've heard so many interviews done with people where like and they
right.
are a few real words scattered in between and you go, are they ever going to finish their sentence? And we're talking about people that are famous people. So the
right.
The young people hear this and they think this is standard.
Right.
And it's not.
It just takes away valuable IQ points at a point when you are trying to impress somebody. If you keep saying like and pausing and sounding like a Valley girl, they are not going to think that you're as smart as you are.
What can someone do to improve?
I would say
their elocution.
Tape yourself. And listen to it. I have done that over the years with radio interviews that I've given. I've taped myself, and I try to take it and listen to it and then learn from my errors. I think the first thing to do is to tape yourself and hear what you're doing wrong.
You talk
when you know what you're doing wrong, you can begin to improve.
Yes, you can. So perhaps having some, because sometimes people listen to what they're saying, and they say, well, that sounds just fine.
Right.
They may need another pair of ears.
Right. I mean, in the book, I have some tips. I ask people to ask their friends, especially usually if you have, I call them verbal tics. If you keep saying the word like, as a Valley girl would, that's a verbal tic. And sometimes your friends will make fun of you when you have those verbal tics, and you should love those people who tease you because then you get to learn what it is you're doing wrong. I mean, you'd rather have a friend tell you that you say like 17 times every minute than a boss tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Very true. That is very true. In school,
I mean, keep
today,
those people close to you who give you some constructive criticism.
I agree. In schools today, there's not an emphasis on that. There used to be,
right,
where it was encouraged. Now, I know Toastmasters is a very good environment for people who want to improve their speaking skills and their elocution. They want to do this. That's a wonderful environment. And there are also different environments privately that you can go to.
Right. Your I took Dale Carnegie courses, and that's an interesting environment, too, where you would have to give a speech each week. That just helps you get better.
I didn't finish with talking about the gals. I wanted to ask, what can a woman do? And your book, The Millionaire's Handbook, is just loaded with all kinds of tips about color and style and all kinds of things. But in the practical application of the everyday world for the person that's really on a budget, what would you recommend to a woman to find out about what's going to be suitable in style and design for her? Because so many people just don't know. And I'll tell you, some of these dressing programs that they have, I've looked at some of the things that they put on some people, and I just shake my head.
Right.
But that it's not really that flattering to individuals. Where
right.
would you recommend someone to go? Is there a place on the Internet? Is there a store someplace that people could go, women could go and say, look, what really looks good on me? What is the style that's going to suit my body type best?
What I recommend in the book is when you receive catalogs in the mail from upscale stores, our tendency is to throw them out. But I feel like that's a mistake. I think it's a good idea to look at the catalogs that you get. And actually, the more upscale the store, the better, you know. And I would go through them, and I would look at the people very carefully, because creative directors and art directors spend months putting together these outfits on their models. And I would try to find somebody who is loosely a bit like you are, and is wearing something that you really, really like, and I would tear that page out of the catalog, and I would use it as a role model when you go shopping, so that you have a very clear picture ahead of you of what you like.
I know we are out of time, Vicki. This has been a lot of fun. I love kibitzing about fashion, and there's so much more that we could talk about, and I think feelings like
you
are worth a million is very important, and how you dress, how you appear really does make a difference. What is your website that people can check out?
Oh, I have two, actually. One is just my name, VickiOliver.com, and that's Vicki with a Y. And then I have a website that says GetTheMillionairesHandbook.com, and that's millionaires without the apostrophe.
Okay, GetTheMillionairesHandbook.com. Well, Vicki, it has been a delight. I wish you nothing but the best, and I'm looking forward to being in New York in April. It is just such a fabulous, fabulous city. I love it. Continued success to you. Check her out.
Thank you
Vicki
so much for
Oliver.
Having me.
It's my pleasure. VickiOliver.com, GetTheMillionairesHandbook.com. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me. Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I do want... Phone lines are open right now, 888-627-6008. I understand there were a few of you people that had called, and I regret because our author, we were not able to reach her until quarter past the hour, then we still extended the half-hour interview as we normally have with the author. So I'm sorry that it wasn't possible for me to pick up the phone line and chat with you, but, hey, the phone line is open now, 888-627-6008. Quickly, I want to mention I'm going to be appearing here in the state of Washington on Saturday, May 24th at the Emerald Spiral Spring Expo. All kinds of wonderful things going on. It's free admission for the public. The hours are 9 to 5 p.m. at the Kent Commons in Kent, Washington, and that's at 525 4th Avenue North. It's 4th Avenue and James Street in Kent. Now, if you want more details about this fabulous event, go to emeraldspiral.com, emeraldspiral.com. I will be there doing many consultations, and I'm going to have a beaucoup amount of books. I hope you'll come by and say hello. Also, Quantum Mind 3, my third class being presented in the area of Bridgeport. It's actually University Place in Washington. It's at 5250 Bridgeport Way West. If you would like to be in this third class, we only have space for 25 students. We're taking registration now. It's $59.95 per person, $69.95 at the door. You can call me at my office, 253-582-5604, for more information. The hours will be 10 a.m. on Saturday, April the 14th, and 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. Now, Robert Newman is going to be discussing Chinese medicine in the first part of the class. Second part of the class, I'm going to be dealing with dreams, interpretations, colors, and we'll also be doing mind exercises for psychic development as well. So it's going to be a dynamic, power-packed class, and I just love doing it. It's just really great. So, again, you can check out this information online at DelphiInternational.com, or you can call me at my office, 253-582-5604, to register early. Well, my goodness, there's just so much that is going on. And I wanted to share this story. I don't believe I've shared this story with you. And I had started it before our guest came online. And it's about a woman by the name of Kathy. And Kathy's upper lobe of her left lung, there was this odd x-ray that was done. And perhaps I mentioned this to you on a previous show. But Kathy did something that was, well, not standard. She challenged physicians because she felt something was very, very wrong. And I can remember years ago when I did the same thing myself and physicians couldn't find anything. And sure enough, I ended up in the hospital just a few days later having major surgery. And when you have experiences like that, you really just don't know what to do. Well, Kathy was willing to stand up to doctors, and she finally found a physician that said, Kathy, if you feel that something is that bad with your body, then I will do a biopsy for you. A biopsy was done, and what they found was this very rare cancer. Now, there was, I don't know how many doctors that had said to her, you don't have cancer, you don't smoke, you don't have lung cancer, this spot, we don't know what it is, but it was so little. And Kathy said, no, we've got to do the biopsy. Well, do you know, by the time she was able to get to this doctor who said, let me do a biopsy, so we double-checked, so your mind is put at rest, the item in her lung had just expanded at a phenomenal rate. There was a six-week period between the time that she finally met, when she first got diagnosed, and then to the time when she finally met a doctor that was willing to do the biopsy. Well, that little tiny tumor had quadrupled in size. The doctor had to remove 90% of her lung. And what remained of her lung was considered useless, that it was never going to be, you know, just never going to work. When they did this, to their dismay, they found that she had an extremely rare kind of cancer. It was exceptionally aggressive. When they examined her blood work, the tumor had released dangerous levels of hormones that were destroying her liver. They couldn't use chemotherapy because she wouldn't survive it. Chemotherapy has just such a horrible effect on internal organs, it would have killed her. Kathy wanted to know, what do we do? Well, the doctors didn't know what to do. They said, I think you just need to go home and prepare your will and enjoy your family, because they honestly did not think she was going to survive. She's 29 years old. She's been given this kind of a verdict. And she said, I do not want to die. I'm going to fight. Now, this is what she did. Her family was very, very supportive, and she said, okay, I want you to be my team. She did homework. She started checking out about the types of foods she should eat and the types of foods that she should not eat. And her family made sure, because of the surgery, she was in a weakened condition, they made sure that she got everything that was appropriate. She also did something else. She meditated. She meditated for hours. She wouldn't let anybody into her environment that wasn't positive. If anybody was down in the mouth, she wouldn't spend 5 minutes with them. They were out. Now, she goes back to the doctor that had performed the surgery for a checkup. He said, we don't understand, but you know what? You are improving. Your liver is actually improving. You're getting better. Now, they put her through 10 weeks in a first-run trial of a particular chemo drug. And in Kathy's case, she was able to go into remission. And she said, we were able to celebrate when doctors said I had maybe a marginal 12% chance of ever seeing my 30th birthday. Now, it's been over 5 years now. Kathy is living a very productive life. She loves her auntie days. She with her little nieces and nephews. She spends time with family and friends, and she started bicycling. And do you know what? She's in triathlons now. Yes, this is a gal that had a major section of lung removed. And she said she's joined a group called Lungevity, and she shares her story all over the country. And she said, you know what? I'm here against all odds. It has to be a miracle. I really see how precious life is, and I love it. I'm glad I'm blessed enough to experience them. That's a great way to end the show. Remember always to, you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Kathy can do it. So can you. Never feel you're alone, because you aren't. This is a wonderful day to be alive. Have an awesome weekend. We'll be back with you live on Monday. Right here, same time, same place, right on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.